Said, we're going to be listening to Caroline tonight, so we certainly want to invite you up and anxious to hear what you have to say.
Thank you. My name is Carolyn, and I'm an alcoholic. And glad to see you all here this evening. And thanks, Kevin, for asking me. And I'm seeing the beauty of it now, and so I appreciate it. and hello, good evening, friends on Zoom. Good to see you. So step four, one of the things that I heard when I got sober. And I got sober October 31st, 1983. So that was 38 years ago. A lot hasn't changed. Some things have. But I hope that what comes through today is what's endured over that time. When I initially worked the steps, I was, I gave it a quick run through, shall we say. In my first year, and it must have been good enough because I have not drank since my sobriety date. But I found a need to do the steps over again. I had several issues which came up on the home front, on the work front, and other things, and so I needed to. It was suggested to me, why don't you put all of your eggs in one basket? And so that basket is Alcoholics Anonymous in the steps. One of the things that used to be suggested was if you're having a hard time doing the step that's in front of you, for me it was the fourth step, they said, go back to the previous step. Now, I'm not suggesting that you just do the 1-2-3 waltz. 1-2-3, 1-2-3, out. No. But what I am suggesting is that if one is on the four step and having some hesitations, it might be a good idea to go back and look at the third step. So I uncovered something that I think is helpful recently, and those are, you know, we usually read the promises, right? But those are we were very careful in my very careful home group years ago to say, these promises come when you're halfway through step nine. You're not going to get them right away. You've got to do the work. Well, I was very interested to see here that there are promises associated with every step that are in the big book. And so if you want to take a look at them, looks like Judy Kidner actually codified them and put them on this piece of paper, and Kevin has a few over there. And they're also, somebody has compiled, Kevin's assisted, I think, of several prayers associated with the steps. And of course, I know the third step prayer, the seventh step prayer, and so on. But there's more. So I wanted to start out tonight on step three and the prayers that are the promises that are mentioned, because I have found them recently to be really helpful, and they're found on page 63 of the big book. And I'll just this is at the top, and it is in How It Works. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer. Being all-powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. We were reborn. And that is immediately precedes the third step prayer. So those are some pretty great promises, and those that in my view, equip us to do the work ahead in the fourth step. And so we have some sort of idea of a conscious contact with our higher power, which we're going to need when we start looking at, start taking the inventory. There's also my experience was, and I've done many inventories since, and we'll get into that when we talk about the 10th step. Again, some of this stuff is semantics, but my experience of the fourth step is that I did two, and the second one I did as if my life depended upon it. And so the thing about the fourth step is that it's talked about in the big book as the, you know, kind of an inventory of a business. Well, what is giving us trouble in the business is what we want to take a look at and root out. So I've been kind of this orthodoxy that we're not necessarily looking at our strengths. And my sponsor would say, well, if there were people that had really, you know, evident self-esteem issues that arose from issues that arose in their drinking years, then perhaps inventorying their assets is a good idea. I also was looking at a reference in preparation for today that showed a checklist that was actually authored by Dr. Bob. And he had his inventory, I believe it was in 1939, and so he had the checklist of selfishness, self-centeredness, etc. And then he had the other assets. I should have brought the checklist. I didn't. But anywho, there's that. Okay. Also, it might seem like I'm running through these steps. I'm going at a pace, perhaps relatively speaking, much slower than the initial people in Alcoholics Anonymous did. And if you want to take a look at the initial work that was done, and I'm saying the initial step taking, all the steps essentially are on page 13. They're in Bill's story. So if you take a look at that more closely, as I did several years into this, when somebody tipped me off to it, I was like, oh, yeah, there it is. So page 13 of Bill's story, where all the steps are found. And the reason that they were, I think, and what I've read of why they did the steps in perhaps a, not hurried, but in a very deliberate fashion and get it done, is because there were a lot of alcoholics that needed the help, needed the guidance, and needed the direction. So we get our experience from doing the steps, just like they did. But they, and I'm not saying that we have fewer people to pass it on to, we just have different ways. And who knew, now we're in the age of Zoom, right? So technology has assisted but was not available back then. I wanted to speak about sponsorship for a few minutes, and because we don't do these steps by ourselves. I mean, we've tried. Some of us have tried, and some of us have gotten confused. There are the big book, you know, each chapter isn't step one, step two, like Bill's approach in the traditions, but in the 12 and 12, excuse me. But in the big book, I needed somebody not only to share their experience, but to show me where the steps were, you know? And maybe by the end of this, I'll have a summary of the pages that actually which cover which step. But so My experience was in finding a sponsor was that I actually found a home group first. I went to several meetings in Tucson, and I'll be honest, I didn't find a group that I felt comfortable in, because I wasn't feeling comfortable anywhere. What I found was some people who I could hear and kind of understand what they were saying. When I first came in, my most comfortable part of my day, where I felt okay, was in an AA meeting. But that doesn't mean that I was necessarily living a comfortable life at the time. That came really after doing the fifth step. So anyways, I looked around in the home group. It was suggested that you look for somebody. This is key. Look for somebody that's actually done the steps. That might be halfway through the ninth step, okay? Because my friend Bud had, he did his fifth step, and then he found out that his sponsor had never done the steps. And I don't know that he found that out from the sponsor, but one thing I remember Bud always saying is, don't resent the awareness, just accept it. And I think it must have been coming from there. But anyway, so I got to know some people in the home group, you know, going out to the meeting after the meeting and that kind of thing. And let me talk about the home group a little bit. My experience of home group was where I went every week, so that people could get to know me and I could get to know them. And after a few months, I got to be the donut, not the donut bringer, the donut hole bringer. I really had my eye on, you know, this, the secretary, the treasury, important things, because I had an ego that went with these important things, not casting aspersions on our trusted servants here, but really, I'm bringing the donuts, and I said, why don't we have donuts? So, you know, that's the impact that I made on my home group for the first 4 years. They did make me the cake baker. So anyways, at home groups, a lot of home groups, you celebrate anniversaries. We celebrated them there. We got at the beginning of the meeting, the person comes up, they have their chip. They're presented with their cake, presented with their chip by their sponsor, with some usually pithy comment, and sincere, but kind of, we had a lot of smart alecks in our group, and it seemed that sometimes those kind of things would come out at birthdays. But I'm here to tell you that during Zoom, we calculated that there's at least 30 of us that all went to that meeting 35, 38 years ago that are still sober. And so that's kind of cool. And on occasion, somebody like a peer would call and see how I was doing if I wasn't there. It was very rare that I was not there. I heard Hank Johnson say, your home group is where you go unless there's a death in the family. Yours. So I kind of took that serious. And so I went. With regard to finding my my sponsor there, now here's the thing. A sponsor is somebody who's worked the steps and somebody that you'll talk to. It's all well and good to find somebody that sponsors a whole lot of people or is experienced, but if in my heart of hearts I know I'm not going to call her, and I'm probably not going to wait in line if there is one, then I have to pick somebody else. Full disclosure, I picked my first sponsor, but when I ran into trouble and needed somebody, or it was suggested that I have somebody with a little more experience, that is 12 years sober instead of 3, my second sponsor was heavily suggested and assigned to me. Thank goodness. and she put up with a lot. I sat on her couch for a long time just saying like the last three words she would say of every sentence. And finally one day she just yelled at me and said, "Stop doing that. It makes you sound like a crazy person." Now, bear in mind, I had just gotten out of the psychiatric ward, so there was a basis for it. But anyway, I did the fourth and fifth step that time as if my life depended upon it with that sponsor. And let's see, what other points? She was a no-nonsense person. She told me that she would not call me. We are close to this day. She did call me once, like when I turned 30. But, you know, I have not. I call Pat. And she's a very dear friend of mine. Now the thing is, your sponsor is not your running buddy. Your running buddy is the person that came in with you or close to your time and who you go to meetings with, and you pick up the phone after the meeting and go, "What were they talking about?" Or, you know, "Are we going to Bob's tomorrow?" Or, you know, "Where?" And I had several of those friends who were really, really helpful to me in AA, but they were not my sponsor. It was made clear that my sponsor was not going to be my friend. It talks about it in the big book of we're not people that are, you know, paying. Oh, there's this section in there, and I'm very sorry that I can't repeat it clearly, but not supplementing our income, we're not a taxi service. You know, all of us to a certain degree have done some of that. You know, maybe made a loan, maybe given rides, but as a general purpose, that is not our sponsor. And sponsorship takes many forms. I mean, or what sponsors require. Some require daily calls, and that may be what the person's hand calls for. Mine called for me picking up the 10,000-pound phone and calling my sponsor. What I did, one of the places that we were visiting, there was a group of people that did daily inventories, and they called each other and shared those, and that was kind of new. I'd never heard of that. 10th step. Trevor's laughing. We thought it was kind of culty, but anyway, we were just visiting, so we didn't say anything, of course. There's all sorts of ways to stay sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. So on to the fearless and searching moral inventory of step four. I dragged my feet on step four. I had, as I said, I had this breakdown. I really couldn't put sentences together very well, but I kept going to meetings, and I had a very patient person, many, many patient people in my life, including my husband and my sponsor and my home group and other people. But I just kind of showed up, and if anybody came up and talked to me and asked, because they were asking, "Well, how's that four step coming?" And I'd say, "Oh, yeah, that's about it, you know." And so today I was thinking about my behavior. What I was thinking was that I didn't think it was going to work for me. I really didn't. I thought that, you know, the problems that I had were not ones that were going to be met with me looking at where I was blaming other people, where I was mad at other people, and then looking at my part. I never really got to that fourth column. You have to get there to the fourth column. So it occurred to me that there's a section in the big book that talks exactly about that, which is the end of the spiritual experience at page 568. And this is a quote by Herbert Spencer. I get emotional about this because my kids put this on our refrigerator years ago when they were in school, you know, when they were in in grade school and high school. I thought that was really cool. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. And that principle is contempt prior to investigation. And I was really in exercising contempt prior to investigation, and I didn't consider that I could read the third step prayer beforehand. But what eventually happened, there was kind of a break between March and September, the beginning of September, that's 6 months, and my sponsor, who I didn't talk to a lot, but on occasion, gave me a deadline. She said, you need to have this done by Labor Day. So I went to the library and put pen to paper. I used the big book. I didn't use an inventory. I just used as she suggested and had gone over with me in February. Fortunately, I was able to remember that's what she told me to do by September. And so I went through it as we do, as some of us do, in the on the columns. Who am I resentful at? Well, resentment was kind of a word that wasn't all that clear to me when I got here, so it was suggested to consider who am I angry with, who am I blaming, who have I blamed? Well, I could put all my family down. And so I just kept writing names. I was asking about Trevor. There's some techniques where you write the first name in the first column, and then you talk about the cause, what they did that never gave me an allowance, and then affects my personal relationship, my my pocketbook. There's those few things in the third column that was suggested to write down, and then where was I at fault? Didn't do jack for a to get an allowance a lot of times. So that's an example. Anyway, so that's what I did. Just took pen to paper, and I had, now bear in mind, I'd done a previous four step, but I was doing that kind of in a self-help mode, kind of I'm okay, you're okay, all these other types of things that were kind of popular in the early 80s, late 70s. And I didn't get that my life depended on AA. It took me 2 years to realize I really, really needed to do these steps and to really look at myself. And so, I did that. So I didn't have a whole lot of help with it. I didn't. Anyways, to this day, Pat says, I'm so amazed that you called me one day and you said, well, I need to do my fifth step. And so I did. And look, what I want to say about the fourth also is that keep it simple. My experience was I kept it simple, so I could finally get it done, okay? And we're learning a lifetime process. It's something that we use I've used it for years, because for years I've gotten upset with people, I've gotten resentments, the same old ones come back. There's a tool, there's a tool. It's the fourth step and the fifth step. So anyways, we look at in the third column of what's affected our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal relations, and our sex relations. And then looking at the fourth step, the fourth column, we look at where we were at fault. Well, or where our actions or inactions were responsible. And I think, people can do the fifth step with, many people do them with priests, but I think it's good to do it with somebody that knows something about Alcoholics Anonymous, because there were a lot of areas in my fourth column that I didn't know what my part was. I didn't know where I was at fault. And frankly, sometimes I wasn't at fault. Sometimes I had been damaged. Sometimes I had been victimized. Or sometimes I might have been belittled. And what necessarily happened after that would be that, you know, where I was at fault, I remember hearing a speaker talk about this, and he said where he had been kind of victimized, that he believed what he went on, and he believed the negative statements and stuff that people had, that person had told him, and that's where he was at fault. He lived with the concept that that person had gave him of who he was. And so I think that's why it's helpful to hear a lot of speakers, go to conventions, do things. I forgot I had a prop. This is the key. This was at the women's retreat, and it was given out at a discussion on the third step. So the third step kind of turns the key and opens our opportunity to get better. Bridget B. created those for us. So a little bit about fear, as the book says, that it's shot through, it's in a lot of the columns, or excuse me, a lot of the entries in the fourth column. And my experience was I just put fear kind of next to the names, you know, of the people. And the sex inventory, that was a list. And that's all I'm going to say about that. That has to do between me and my sponsor, and the help that I got there. But I also think that the part about in the sex inventory that's discussed at page 69 talks about conduct, and I think. Actually, a person I sponsor brought this to my attention. It's at page 69. It says, we reviewed our own conduct over the years past. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Whom had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? We got this all down on paper and looked at it. I submit that's applicable to a whole lot of other stuff besides sex. And she kept referring to it as a conduct inventory, which she had learned about when she was at treatment. So I keep coming back. I learn from a lot of people, and that I learned from her. After doing the fourth step, my sponsor said, you know, this is the only step where there's any analysis involved, the fourth and fifth step, really. We don't analyze our conduct other than in the fourth step and the tenth step. So this isn't a program about self-knowledge, because as it says right there in the book on some page I didn't find before I got here, you can Google it. Self-knowledge avails us nothing, okay? The process of doing the fifth step is one of, at least mine was, and I think most of us, it's an ego-smashing process. At home, on the couch, I cannot smash my own ego. I cannot become humbled by my own thinking. It requires me to be humble enough initially, and then I become more humbled by sharing with another person and with God in the presence of the other person these things that I have kept secret into myself. Some of them weren't secret. A whole lot of people knew about some of my bad behavior. But in any event, I became willing to go through it with somebody else and trusting. Now, another word about a sponsor, and again, this is right in the book, says look for a close-mouthed friend. Look for somebody, you got to know the person well enough so you know that they're not going to tell your stuff, you know, all over other meetings. AA has saved my life. I think the steps and God have saved my life. And we are all imperfect people. And you just want to make sure that those juicy tidbits, or if there is one or two, don't get out. So that's, I think that's something to speak of regarding a making sure that you know who you're talking to and knowing who your sponsor is. And we are, you know, I believe that I'm protected by God. I didn't break my anonymity much. I was in the legal profession and a judge and what have you. I did used to go to meetings. I still went to my home group when I was on the bench, much to the surprise of the people that a few people would dribble in who had been ordered there, sentenced there, and they'd think I was there checking up on them until I might tell in a general way what my experience was. But anyway, I've never been injured by my association with Alcoholics Anonymous. That said, I've always been confidential and careful, as we are, of each other's anonymity. The suggestion to me was, do not sit on your fourth step. Well, okay, I just didn't do it, you know. But then when I got it done, I went and took it to my sponsor and read it off. And that's exactly what I did. I didn't leave anything out this time. I had left some few personal things out that I was not willing to share the first time. But the second time, I just kept reading and kept reading and kept reading, and it was about 6 hours. But Pat would interject occasionally, and she was very helpful because she'd point out some stuff that I hadn't seen. And, you know, bear in mind, at that time I was 2 years sober, so there was plenty that I hadn't seen. But she was caring and kind, and not, you know, there was no humiliation, nothing like that. When I speak that we have to be, you know, we are humbled by the experience, it's not because somebody else is humiliating us. It's because there we are in front of God and our sponsor, or our closed-mouth friend, telling stuff that we thought we would never tell anybody. But it is necessary. And why? Where is that line? I had this all tabbed. I know it. I know the gist of it. Why do we do this? Because if we don't, we might drink. Okay? For the best reason first is that if we fail to do a thorough fourth and fifth, there is a strong likelihood that we will drink. We don't know what that looks like. Many of us have been around here. You know, you could be around here a short time and a long time and still see people that have not, haven't put all their eggs in one basket, gone for it 100%, best you can. You know, I mean, it doesn't have to be the long 6 hour thing, but it's better that it's not on the back of a cocktail napkin, you know, because yeah. That probably isn't demonstrating our willingness. My experience after doing the fifth step on Labor Day in 1985 was I was suggested to go home after having done that, and kind of review the first five steps. And for me, they were in writing. The first step was in writing. It was, you know, I said 20 incidents where I was powerless over alcohol. Read the third step prayer. I had previously read that with my sponsor and dated it. And so that's what's suggested, is to go home, take the book off the shelf, and make sure that I was going to look this up. I don't know if there's any stonemasons here. I have no idea what it means to make mortar without sand, to be honest. Probably could riff on it, but I don't really know. I think it means that we're supposed to have a firm foundation, and in prayer and looking at it to make sure that we do, that we didn't leave anything out. And then, so on page 76 is steps 6 and 7. So if we can answer to our satisfaction, we then look at step six, that is the mortar without sand and the review of the five proposals. We have emphasized willingness as being indispensable. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? Can he now take them all, everyone? If we still cling to something we will not let go, we ask God to help us be willing. And then when ready, that's step six. When ready, step seven, we say something like this: My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. And then we have completed step seven. So you say my experience of steps six and seven initially was pretty brief. It was a matter of doing the review and doing the prayer on my own. Since then, I've utilized the seven-step prayer at different times, and you know, I think we were just at a meeting talking about how initially we thought all our character defects were going to be taken away, but my experience was that was not the case. But now I know what they are. When I did that fifth step and had my my sponsor's help and that of my higher power, I know what my defects are. They're not much different than yours. I think that there's kind of a finite source. I don't think any of us are particularly that different. I wanted to be, and I held out because I thought I was. But when ultimately I did those steps, I found out that I was just a plain old alcoholic, and thank goodness. Thank goodness for that. So if you're new or nearly new or have taken the steps and want another run at it, that's one approach. Thank you. No. Welcome.
So now we would like to ask our audience, anybody here in the room or on Zoom who has a question for Carolyn, please go ahead and raise your hand if you're here in the room, or if you're on Zoom, go ahead and speak up.
Hi, I'm Ryan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Ryan.
Hi, Carolyn. Thank you for sharing. You've been sober for 38 years. How often have you done a fourth and fifth step, a thorough, like, deep dive? Or is it just when things are off, or step eight and nine aren't working? Or how many times have you really done a thorough?
I've done a thorough fourth and fifth,
yeah,
as if my life depended upon it, the first time, one. What I've done subsequently is as directed, or as I see it, in the book, when these things crop up, which is selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. And sometimes those have had more than one entry on them. You know, in the first column, it's been more people or institutions. You know, a lot has gone on in 36 years. So, and then I would read those off. Sometimes my sponsor wasn't available. She moved to California when I was 4 years sober, and we moved to a different place in Arizona, so we weren't face-to-face. I had a situation come up when I was 7 years sober, and I had to do, I wouldn't call it a deep dive back into the four-step going back over stuff, but I had a new pile of stuff. And so Claudine moved to town, and she helped me immeasurably, and I did a very thorough 10th step at the time and read it to her, and then she moved. It was just like she came in and she left. I would like to say a word about sponsorship, too. I did spend 25 years in rural America, in rural AA, and so there weren't that many women, and so it was a big deal that Claudine came to town. And also, if a woman came in and she was new, I would just appoint myself as her sponsor. That worked, kind of, but I don't do that today. Thank you.
Hi, Carolyn. Thank you so much for your sharing your experience with the steps. But here's my question. What about an ongoing practice of 6 and 7? Is that something you think is important? If so, how do you approach it? Is there anything you see? I mean, the big book is pretty sparse on those two steps. Mm-hmm. So any direction that you might offer?
Well, I think as far as 6 and 7, the issue of being willing to have a character defect removed and asking that it be removed comes up on a very regular basis, and I will say that I don't do a nightly review as often as I should, which is, or you know, as often as it says when we retire at night. That's the 11th step. So that's where I think that would come in. But I've heard of Drop the Rock. I've never read it. I am familiar that there's a lot more attention in other people's experience on 6 and 7, and that is not my experience.
Thank you.
And open-mindedness is really important, so, yeah.
Hi, Patty. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Patty.
Hi, Carolyn. As a new person to AA, do you have any advice on the steps? I'm having, like, I want to hurry up and get them done. And I'm starting to get a little anxious and trying to tell myself I need to slow down, understand everything, and, you know, I just want to go, go, go. But I think I'm going to just, I don't know, get myself into some trouble there because I'm trying to do everything too fast.
Sure.
Do you have any advice?
Well, it's great to see
that?
You, Patty. And I think a lot of us women would love to talk to you after the meeting. My general suggestions are, I mean, probably everybody has a little different experience in here. My experience is, and the suggestion is, suit up and show up. Get to a lot of meetings. Don't drink in between them, and keep your ears attuned to some women that have what you want, that is, have a quality in their life, you know, not their car or whatever, but their character and level of serenity, perhaps, that you'd like to get to know better. And, you know, I know we gave you a phone list, call some people up and that. The steps are here. They are here for you. And, but it's a process.
Thank you, Carolyn. I really enjoyed tonight. A brief comment on what you said, something about the mortar and the sand or something.
Yes.
It made me think of when I used to paint houses. If you paint with epoxy and you don't put it in the hardener, nothing's going to harden up. It's like soup. Okay. So you needed both parts in order for it to work. So that's what made me think. I like visual things, so I'm listening to you and I picture that. So, I did not like doing my 4-step because I was afraid somebody might find it. So I guess my question is, when I did it and I was threatened, like, if you don't have it done by the retreat, we're going to talk. So I started, you know, writing a lot of things. Now, we burned my 4-step at the women's retreat. How do you handle that as far as that idea or keeping it for future reference? What is your thoughts about that?
My thought is that the 4-step is our guidebook to the step 8 and the amends that we're going to make in step 9, so I think we have to retain it, but retaining it in a safe place. I do know people who have had their 4-step read by, you know, family members and stuff, and that's to be avoided. But, and to be honest, after I did my 8-step and 9-step, I don't know where that 4-step went. I must have shredded it. Yeah.
Hey, you know how you mentioned you used to be on, like, meds and all that? Like, when you went through the 4th and 5th, which brings up a lot of feelings. Like, at any point did you feel like this is too much, I need something, maybe I should be on, you know what I mean, where you think, God can't handle it, this is just, you know.
Well, it might have been why I put it off for 6 months, you know, but that wasn't an option for me anymore. I had a lot of experience in the world of psychiatry and pharmaceutical help, and it didn't work for me. That's just my own personal experience. Today, I have incidents, circumstances where I'm like, oh, I'd love to take the edge off this. I am very uncomfortable. You know, I have adult children, and sometimes things come up with them. And I've gone to another program for one of them. But the thing is, I've had experiences where I've literally been shaking because I've been so afraid. But I'm in AA, so I pursue the tools that we have. And even when I was doing the four-step, we still have the tools, you know, the tools of prayer, the tools of talking to somebody else. God isn't going to drop us on our ass when we're trying to do that, when we're trying to do the right thing. And I think that that's the help that I got, bottom line.
Hi, I'm Caitlin. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Caitlin.
I was just curious, like, just like you said, like, doing, like, a step, you know, a mini step forward, daily inventory at night, like, what are kind of the basics that you would go off of at night?
You're going to have to come 2 weeks from now. Because that's the 10th and 11th step. Yeah. It's all in there. So I'm very literal. So it's pretty much what I do every day, and sometimes with Trevor, most days, is we literally read the 11th step. And then when I'm planning out my day and then looking at the how it went, maybe make a little list, you know? But we'll elaborate on that because we're not dragging this. This is taking, this is, it's 5 weeks. The process, yeah. Thanks for your question.
Anybody on Zoom have a question for Carolyn? Or anybody else here in the room? If not, thank you, Carolyn.
Thank you, thanks.